Sing along with a song, whether you know it or not, and just, yeah, it's fantastic. And the choir does it too, but it comes out amazing. Thank you so much for welcoming me, especially to Janet and team for organizing. Your space looks so beautiful. And the vibe is very welcoming and affirming. So thank you for allowing me to join you. It's probably common knowledge in our culture that at Hanukkah we celebrate the miracle of the lights, sort of as I described in the children's story. And one of your children offered an interpretation I had never, ever heard before, that they were simply conservation-minded and they rationed their oil, and that's why it lasted for 8 days. There's a meme going around social media this year about trying to feel our way into the miracle of Hanukkah. And it says, imagine your cell phone battery had only 10% left and your phone continued to work for 8 days on that 10% battery. That actually happened to our family about 7 years ago when my kids were teenagers. My spouse and our teens were hiking for 5 days up in Karamias, up by Cathedral Lakes Lodge, and we were camping and we brought everything anyone could need except no chargers for our cell phones. And there wasn't any cell phone reception, but we planned to take a lot of pictures, 5 days worth of continuous pictures. And I don't really know how we did it, because by the time we got up the mountain, there was 10% left on our cell phones. But we turned off everything that could be turned off, and we turned it off whenever we weren't taking pictures, and we got 5 days worth of pictures out of 10% battery. It's a miracle. It all depends on how you think about it. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of the meanings of Hanukkah in classical Jewish texts in a way that unfolds over time. The initial story of Hanukkah comes down to us in two texts called the Books of Maccabees. One of them is written in Hebrew, one of them is written in Greek. One of them tells the story of the events in a very factual, historical way, with a political emphasis. The other tells the story in a more prophetic and hyper-religious way, so that everything that happens is an expression of God's pleasure and displeasure with one or another group of people. Same events, very different interpretations. But neither of those two books mention a miracle of the lights at all. The events of Hanukkah took place approximately 164 BCE in that year. And the two books of Maccabees were written down, about 100 years later than that, 60 BCE. And you would think that the story of the miracle, had it been told in 164 BCE, would have been the most powerful essence of the retelling of the story at a religious festival. And yet, as far as we can tell, it had not yet ever been told. The only story that had been told was about the resistance against the invading Syrian king Antiochus, the resistance led by a particular family of priests, who later became the Hasmonean dynasty of rulers, and how this particular group of priests celebrated their victory with a eight-day solstice festival in the temple that was modeled on, originally, the Feast of Booths, Sukkot, the fall harvest feast that was also understood as the time in Jewish tradition when the Messianic king would ascend the throne, bring peace and justice to the region, along with cooperation with all other nations. So if you are politically skeptical, you can already see what's happening. The particular priestly family, the Hasmonean family, said, "We have won this military victory," which, by the way, was a ragtag militia against a small but formidable imperial army. They said, "We won. We'd like to become more powerful. One of the symbolic things that we will do is we'll have everyone celebrate us each winter in a festival that declares that we are the divinely ordained rulers who are just going to bring peace and justice to our region." Well, as you can imagine, they did not really bring peace and justice to their region. In fact, they collapsed the distinction between religious leadership and political leadership in ancient Judea, and they concentrated all of the leadership in the hands of their family. And after several generations, what became most important to the family was, of course, the political health and power of the family, and not that of the people they ruled. About 100 years into the reign of the dynasty, two brothers, both royal brothers, decided that each of them wanted to be ruler. They each gathered their forces one against the other to see who would use more violence and intimidation and put the other brother down. One of the brothers got the great idea that he would ally with the emerging Roman Empire. And he would promise allegiance to Rome if Rome would send in troops to help him win against his brother. The Romans sent in their troops, but you know how the story goes. The Romans never left. And bit by bit, they took over Judea and instituted their own oppressive policies. And you know that by the first century, the time of Jesus, resistance against Rome was in full swing. Jewish resistance against Rome was in full swing. In the year 70, the Jews of Judea rebelled against Rome. Rome won, destroyed the holy city of Jerusalem and the temple. About 70 years later, the Judeans rebelled again, and Rome wreaked even more destruction and oppression to put down that rebellion. Out of the ashes of the second rebellion come the movement that we call modern Judaism today. We call it Rabbinic Judaism, maybe partly to aggrandize the role of contemporary rabbis, who are actually really different from the earliest generation of rabbis, who were revolutionaries trying to find ways to continue the culture after all the disruption caused by the Roman occupation. Some of the leaders of this movement, And we have their voices recorded in a document we call the Talmud. Some of the leaders of this movement really, really did not like the Hasmonean dynasty. The leaders, the Maccabees, another name for them, who created the holiday of Hanukkah. But they loved the holiday. Who wouldn't love a solstice holiday that's all about light and celebration and partying at the darkest, coldest time of the year? So they said, here's what really happened at Hanukkah. When the people were celebrating, they went to light the menorah. And you know what? They had only one jar of olive oil that would have been acceptable to the high priest. And they lit it anyway, and it lasted for 8 days. And every winter, we celebrate this miracle. That was their revisionist story, told, maybe the year 200 or 300, because they didn't like the actual political origin story of the holiday, because those who seemed to be heroes in 164 BCE, by 150 CE, were the villains of the Jewish people. So they simply changed it to a religious and spiritual holiday. And you can see, if you're good at symbolism 101, what they were trying to teach with their story about the lights. For them, the lights represent the presence of the divine, the presence of spirit, the presence of conscience among the people. And what saves us, they thought, is not military victories by rulers who may inevitably become corrupt, but what saves us is connecting with the divine spirit in us, connecting with that sense of ethics and justice and spirit. And you know what? Even if we don't have a temple, even if the temple's been destroyed, even if there's no high priest and this whole idea of special holy oil is gone, doesn't matter at all, because the light of the spirit just keeps shining ever more powerfully. Here's another question. Where did they get this idea from? Did they really just make it up out of nowhere? The answer is no. In their minds, they had a proof text. And it came from the prophet Zechariah. Pronounce it in English, Zechariah. I usually default to the Hebrew pronunciation. The prophet Zechariah, he had actually lived way before the time of the rabbis. He lived approximately 530 BCE. And Zechariah's prophecies came to him in dreams. We can relate to his prophecies, most of us. He had wild, symbolic dreams in which he journeyed to the heavenly realms, and he went places with an angelic guide, and the angel would explain to him what the strange images and events in his dream meant. Zechariah was prophesying just after another war, 60 years after the Babylonian Empire had destroyed the Middle Eastern region. The Persians had conquered the Babylonians, and the Persians were inviting, they had a different philosophy of empire, and they were inviting all of the displaced peoples to go back to their land, rebuild their cultures. Sure, they'd pay heavy taxes once they were flourishing, but people were going to have autonomy. And Zechariah, who was already a religious leader, was trying to figure out what is a just an ethical way for people to step into their own political autonomy and leadership. And some of his answers came to him through dreams. One of his most significant dreams, he dreams that he's suddenly in the temple, and there's a giant menorah, and on one side is a high priest, and on another side is a righteous king. And in the middle is a giant menorah. But it's not like any menorah you've ever seen. This is a menorah, a candelabra, whose branches directly touch the olive trees, and the oil downloads into the candelabra straight from the olive trees. There's no processing, there's no harvesting, there's no exploitation of the land, there's no commercialism, there's no business interests. The spirit of creation itself lights this lamp. And Zechariah gets that this is a powerful symbol, or rather the dreaming Zechariah. He had kind of lucid dreams where he recognized weird stuff was happening. The dreaming Zechariah gets that this is pretty wild. And he says to the angel, "What is this?" And the angel says, "You know what this is." Zechariah says, "No, I don't." And the angel says, "It's obvious. It means not by might, not by power, but by my spirit." And that's all the information Zechariah gets. And he wakes up. And if you read his prophetic book, it's short, it's only 5,000 words. You've probably written papers longer than Zechariah's entire book of prophecy. If you look through his book, you see that some of it is an attempt to interpret what this means, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit. Because as Zechariah envisions what it will be like to be politically autonomous, to have control over the distribution of economic resources in your community, to have the ability to make your own laws, for you to regulate commerce in your community. He thinks about what that will mean, and he says, the most important things for us to do is to tell the truth to one another, to not cheat each other in business, to not make any war or use any more violence than we absolutely have to in self-defense, to feed the widows, the orphans, the poor, and the new immigrants. These, Zechariah says, are the most important thing. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit. That is what will keep the community together and create it as a community that's going to last not 100 years like the Hasmonean dynasty did, but hundreds and thousands of years, because it will be a just and sustainable community. Now, is this going to happen once and for all and be done with it? Ha 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 ha!